invite you to allow your eyes to close. Take a few nice deep breaths. And as you settle, as you breathe, as you arrive, maybe just allowing the love, the joy, and the peace to wash over you. Maybe allowing your attention and your awareness to go inside and just notice, how is it with love, with joy, with peace? Is it there? Is it not there? The idea here is to just notice how it is with you in this present moment. And can you, as the song says, just let it be? In the presence of love, everyone and everything is welcome. And that experience starts with each of us individually. Can all of you be welcome here with you? Maybe there's a worry or a care or a dis-ease of some sort with you this morning that you're carrying. Can you just hold that in loving awareness and compassion? And then just coming back to your breath, noticing the sensation of breathing in and breathing out, noticing how you're held to the earth by gravity, maybe allowing your awareness to come back to the room, the sounds, the smells, the other beings that are here. Taking another couple nice deep breaths. And as you're ready, gently opening your eyes. Thank you. So good. So good. Before I launch into the message this morning, as Judith noticed, there's a lot happening around here. And I just wanted to just clarify and confirm what we have going on this week, or actually through the summer. There are four Friday nights, the first one coming up this Friday, where we're going to invite as many people from our community to join us. And I'm really excited about it because we're going to be talking about the power of myth. Myths are simply stories that tell truth without the use of facts. And it shows up throughout the Bible and other sacred writings. And I'm really looking forward to just having a chance to gather around that theme together and just share and grow together. Grow together after that. And then after the meeting from 6 until 7, we're going to be having an optional fire circle right out around there. We're going to be able to gather. And I'm especially excited about this Friday because we're going to be doing a circle that is in honor of our summer solstice. And you heard Lauren's name mentioned earlier, and I'm just going to put you on the spot here, if it's okay, Laura, to tell us a little bit more about it so we can know what to expect.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Yeah, I actually run a community group called Core Connections, and we're just about getting together in person to celebrate being alive. So part of our group will be there, and on Friday outside at the circle, we'll gather together. It is a drum circle, so if you have a drum, bring a drum. If you don't have a drum, bring yourself, bring your neighbor. It's open to everyone. And yeah, we just want to celebrate the solstice, the longest day of the light, together in community and have a good time. And do bring a camp chair, please, because we'll probably want to be seated around the fire or whatever you need to be comfortable. The sun will start going down, so think about maybe bringing a coat or a blanket, too. So yeah, everyone is welcome, and we'd love to have you there this Friday.
Awesome. Thank you, Lauren. Hard to believe we're celebrating the longest day of the year. Doesn't it seem like yesterday it was all about the shortest day of the year? I'm showing my immaturity here. After the longest day of the year, then you know what happens? The days start getting shorter again. No, but I'm grateful for the opportunity, though, to honor the seasons and honor the rhythms of life and really, you know, slow down and tune in and listen to the rhythm and listen to the timing and listen to the movements of the natural world in which we live. This whole series of messages that I've been talking about have really been anchored on this one thought: shifting from a consciousness of trying to manage, trying to control, trying to dominate our surroundings, and rather to a consciousness of opening and receiving and being in relationship with nature in our environment. And so today we're continuing in our little series of messages called Exploring the Christ Way. And I'm excited to share a few thoughts about prayer. And just as life would have it, my settling here into Coeur d'Alene just provides these wonderful little tee-ups for today's message. And so yesterday, as I was driving around town, I happened upon this license plate. Have any of you seen this? Have you? Can you get a license plate here that says an appeal to heaven? Interesting. Yeah. John 4:24. I'm curious, does anybody know what John 4:24 is? It's a Bible verse. Yeah. Well, I want to read it to you because I really think it sets up this thing when we think about prayer. And so much, I mean, how do you cover prayer in one message? You don't. You just touch on a couple of points and hope that something here makes sense. But at a fundamental level, prayer is an experience of some sort of connection with the divine or the transcendent. I can't think of any other way to put it. And as many as there are individuals here on this planet, I believe there are just as many individual ways that people connect to their sense of the divine or the transcendent or God or science or nature, whatever it is. And there are so many forms, but this is a really interesting story that I just hope kind of sets up what I want to talk to you about today as we talk about prayer. This is John chapter 4.
Now, when Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus was making and baptizing more disciples than John, although Jesus himself did not baptize, but only for his disciples. Even back in Jesus' day, people got caught up with counting. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. He left Judea and departed again for Galilee, and he had to pass through Samaria. So he came to a town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, so that Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour. The first thing I would like to point out is Jesus is in a place he had no business being in. Samaritans were a class of people that came about during the period when the Hebrew people were taken out of their so-called promised land into foreign lands, and the people started to intermarry and interbreed with one another. And so the purity of the Hebrew race was compromised, and Samaritans were known as half-breeds. Okay, it was worse than non-breeds. You know, I mean, there were Hebrews and there were non-Hebrews, okay? But this kind of mongrel half-breed was despised. It's just interesting to, now it's real easy, you know, for us to think, oh, well, no, I can't believe that today. Right? Yeah, you know. Just as you read this story, think about, are there people, are there places in your life that you experience maybe aversion, maybe a little bit of fear, maybe a little bit of unknown? I don't think it's any insignificance that we're in Pride Month. And there are classes of people, segments of people of our population that I observe are outcast, are unknown, are at best avoided, and at most hated. Okay? This is where Jesus was walking. Now, it goes on. A woman came from Samaria to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." Second huge party foul that Jesus did here. You know what it was? Talking to a woman. Yeah. Yeah, patriarchy was alive and well, and men had no business interacting with women. Women had no business interacting with men. The Samaritan woman said to Jesus, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria?" You can't get more outcast than that. A Hebrew man talking to a Samaritan woman. Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock." Now, do you see what's happening here? Jesus is speaking in allegory. He's speaking in mythology. But where do our heads go? To the literal. Okay? This is why I'm really excited about our little series on Friday about mythology, to really appreciate the value of expanding our understanding of spiritual truth beyond facts. And here's a person in this story just kind of figuring out, where's this living water coming from? So Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water in this well will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give in him will spring up a water welling up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come here to draw water." Still not quite getting it. So Jesus said to her, "Go, call your husband and come here." The woman answered him, "I have no husband." Jesus said to her, "You are right in saying, 'I have no husband,' for you have had five husbands, and the one you have not now is not your husband. What you have said is true." The woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you're a prophet." Duh. Our fathers worshipped on this. Now notice here, Jesus is starting to move in close to seeing this woman in love. Notice how she deflects. "Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship." Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father." Be mindful of the masculine images here for God. This just comes up in the Latin translations of the Bible, so try not to just let the masculine of God derail you too much. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming and is now here where true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for God is seeking such people to worship him. Here now is John 4:24, which is on the license plate. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. I couldn't resist just not wanting to offer you the context of this, because as there's a blessing and there's a weakness in bumper sticker spirituality. Throw a verse, throw something on here, and I'm not trying to be critical of whoever's doing this. I think the meaning is intent. But what's happened is that verse, taken out of its historical context, can mean for many people a couple of things. Believe a bunch of historical facts about Jesus and elevate Jesus and his life and his teaching above all other spiritual teachings and all other spiritual examples and all other things and make it supreme. And what that does is it takes that story that I just read you out of its actual historical context and reads back into it thousands of years of Christian history, Christian theology, and Christian doctrine. And I believe misses and distorts the point. Jesus offers here an example saying, God, the divine love is spirit. And the word worship, I know, may be troublesome to some of you. We don't use it a lot in these circles, but the word worship simply literally means to ascribe value, to ascribe worth. So the inquiry for you is, what, you know, it may not be God, it may not be Jesus, it may not even be the divine or transcendent, but to what in your life do you attribute value? To what in your life do you attribute worth? And know what that is. And know that however that plays out in your life, you're beginning to understand what prayer is all about. The last little thing I just want to draw attention to on this license plate, an appeal to heaven. Heaven. In the Bible, well, over the centuries, heaven has become distorted to mean just one thing for many people, a place to go after you die, right? You go to a funeral, you go to a memorial, oh, so-and-so's in heaven, so-and-so's in heaven, okay? And that certainly may be true. I mean, I'm not here to pour, you know, cold water on anybody's belief system. Have there been people who've had near-death experiences, seen the light, all that kind of stuff? Yes, but I mean, to my knowledge, nobody's actually come back from heaven and actually reported exactly on what it's like. But there's another dimension to heaven that I think is more relevant to us as it pertains to this thing called prayer that I want to share with us about this morning. And that is this: heaven is not just a place to die and go to, it's also a place to awaken and live from. And as you can see in this story of Jesus in a land where he shouldn't be, talking to someone he shouldn't, there's this movement of love, there's this movement of compassion, there's this movement of being seen and being exposed, and this woman feeling a little uncomfortable by it. That's the truth that I want to reflect on here today as you think of prayer. Because I know, I get the prayer requests every week, and there's everything from disease that's going on, to financial hardship that's going on, to loss of relationships that's happening, to loss of health. I mean, so many things, and you know, and we just, you know, what are we to do with it? I want to invite you to look at that display up there. That's a display of just a few of the spiritual symbols around the world. And would you agree that there's a lot of finger pointing, rock throwing? Not here, of course. I read in the paper this morning that a few years ago there was a statue of Ganesh that was put up on 6th and Sherman. I don't think it's there anymore because I just walked past it, you know, but it created just a big flap, you know, it's like, whatever. But it's okay, these symbols are just representative of the many, many ways that people connect with spirit and the divine. And I think what Jesus teaches here and this offers us here is that, well, I'll just share it with this. The first thing to consider is this, a what if question. What if prayer has less to do with who or what you pray to, or even what you pray for, but where you pray from. Let me say it again, just let that sink in. What would shift in your life if prayer had less to do with who or what you pray to, or even what you pray for, but where you pray from? An example of a prayer. Help me set aside everything I think I know so I might have a soft heart and an open mind. Help me set aside everything I think I know. Why? So that I might have a soft heart and an open mind. I think this is important because so many times I think our conception of God is this like genie. We've just got to rub the lamp just right to get what we want. Or God is some kind of gigantic casino slot machine, you know, and we pull the levers and hold on and hope we get the ching, 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 ching and strike the jackpot. Have you ever been there? I mean, I've been there as well. And even in these circles here in which we run, we talk a lot about manifesting and creating your reality. Did I tell you the story about the woman a while back who gave me not one, not two, but three pages, single-spaced, 12-point font of the man that she was calling into her life? I read it, and I found myself laughing, and I gave it back, and I think I might have even said, I don't even know if Jesus is going to fit this bill, okay? I am all for, please hear me, I am all for visualizing and knowing and seeing and shifting a consciousness of a reality that, yes, our minds, quantum physics is showing this, that the impact of an observer on the quantum field can affect the outcome of that. I affirm all of that. And I'm also adding to that whole thing that I think fundamentally the deeper experience of prayer is this experience of being able to accept life as it is, and ultimately to experience love as it is. I've seen many miracles in my life. I've seen diseases healed. I've seen relationships get back together. I've seen financial provision come surprisingly. And I've also seen people experience tremendous peace, tremendous joy, tremendous contentment in the deepest of tragedies when life makes no sense at all. And I think that's the value and that's the potential of prayer. A second what-if idea with prayer. What if prayer is centered on the solution and not the problem? If we center on the solution, not the problem. Notice in this passage of Jesus in John chapter 4, it had nothing to do with physical thirst, as important as drinking water is. But he lovingly, gently, compassionately guided the woman back to that which matters most, and that is the living water of love. The living water of love. So it begs the question, well, okay, Reverend, then what's the solution? we all know that, okay, we're not going to dwell on the problem and we shouldn't do that and or this, that, or the other thing. Yes, it can beget all kinds of interesting things. But what could some solutions be? This fall, one of the classes that I'll be offering is a class on the book The Infinite Way by Joel Goldsmith. Hands down, my favorite book on prayer. I think I've told you that before, and you don't have to remember that for right now. But I really believe the value of prayer is not only to the person who's the recipient of those prayers, but also the value and the impact to the one who's praying. I think that's what we often don't think about. We think about the value and the recipient. How many of you have been the recipients of prayers? You've felt people praying for you. Yes? Yeah, so have I. I have felt your prayers for me as I continue to just land here and grow more and more and more in love with this beautiful place that we know is Idaho. But I also can say that when we engage in prayer for other people as well, there's a change that happens in us as well. And so I want to just share a little bit about what some of those solutions might be. First of all, just want to share, this is a lengthy quote from Rumi, and you might be familiar with it, but I think this quote frames prayer, frames the experience of prayer, frames the practice and the impact of prayer in a really solid container. He writes, "Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there's a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense." Wow. "Out beyond ideas of right and wrong, there's a field. I'll meet you there. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense." My friends, we're connected to each other. We're connected to this world, like it or not. And the experience of that connection, I believe, is mitigated through prayer. So, what are some potential prayer solutions? There's a Chinese folktale. Maybe you've heard it. Maybe it's good, maybe it's not. About a boy who went out, found a beautiful horse in the field, brought it home to his dad. "Look, Dad, look what I got, this beautiful horse. What do you think?" And the dad said, "Maybe it's good, maybe it's not." And shortly after that, a villager came with a little boy in tow and told the dad, "Hey, this beautiful horse has thrown your child off and broken his leg. He's maimed. What do you think?" And the wise farmer says, "Maybe it's good, maybe it's not." And shortly thereafter, there was a war, and young men were being drafted to the war, and a villager came and said, "Hey, guess what? Because your son's injured, he's not drafted to war, and maybe that means he'll be able to care for you in his old age with a limp, but he's not going. What do you think?" You know, maybe it's good, maybe it's not. And on and on and on and on the story goes. But as you look at your life and the things that come into our lives that appear tragic, that appear absurd, that appear painful, that appear nonsensical, could it be that there is a greater purpose and a greater plan unfolding? Oh yeah. Oh yeah. This is the Buddhist principle of non-attachment. So when we pray, we set an intention. We set an intention to connect again to love. We set an intention to know perfect peace, perfect healing, perfect health, and then we let it go. We let go of attachment to any outcome to it. It's a practice. It's hard. I have a hard time doing it. But that's the practice. Secondly, shifting from control to compassion. Love is an intelligence that seeks expression. And in all of the things that we cry out to prayer, I really believe that prayer is the experience to coming back to an expression of love. In the Bible, it says in 1 Corinthians, love is patient, love is kind, does not envy, it does not boast, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Love never ends. And the thing about that is, if we were just to summarize all that, love cannot be manipulated, love cannot be possessed, love cannot be controlled. And yet that's hard, because when we have the experience of giving love or receiving love, it feels really good, right? Sometimes the hardest thing is to love and let go. Any of you who've lost a loved one, you know that. Anyone that you've seen your children grow up and mature. Loving and letting go, yes. So we shift our consciousness from trying to control and manage and manipulate a situation to compassion. What does compassion mean? Calm with passion, feel. To feel with. To walk alongside with someone. Have you had the experience of just someone come alongside you when you're hurting and just say, hey, I'm here. I sure have. I've been the beneficiary of that. In those moments, I don't need to be fixed. I don't need to be coached. I don't need to be exhorted. But just to know that someone is here. In relationships, Richard Rohr puts it this way. Would you rather have a friend with whom you're always connected or a friend with whom they're always correct? Would you rather have a friend who's always connected or a friend who's always correct? This really applies to intimate relationships, but I think in all of our relationships. What if instead prayer was about coming back to the consciousness of our connection rather than worrying about are we correct? Even in the experience of prayer, you know, there's a lot. I mean, as you've heard, we believe in the power of prayer here in this community. Absolutely. And there are books and books and books and workshops and workshops and workshops and methods and methods and methods. And I got to tell you, the more I read the books, the more I read about the workshops, the more I read about the methods, I just feel this weight on my shoulder. Maybe I'm getting old and I'm getting lazy. I don't know. But folks, every time I see that, I just remember, what did Jesus say? Jesus said, take my yoke upon you, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Prayer is about just connecting heart to heart and knowing the never-ending love and health and healing that's always there in relationship. A second shift is shifting from anger to grief. How many of you got angry yesterday? Did any of you experience anger? Nobody? Wow, you all, okay. I did when I had to park 3 blocks away to get to the coffee shop I wanted to go to. It's like, the traffic in this town is unreal. And it's like, oh no, wait a minute, it's not that bad at all. I had to walk not one, not two, but 3 blocks to get to Coeur d'Alene Coffee yesterday. What an outrage. This is insane. Gee. Okay. But here's the deal, all right? Anger rises in defense of something sacred. And if you can learn, if we can learn in prayer and being prayed for to hold our anger and not be harmful to ourselves or not be harmful to others, that's where it becomes hurtful. But rather to be with it and to hold it in compassion, usually there's some sense of sadness underneath there. It's hard to always know where it is, but just if you scan your life and you notice certain things that just, oh, this isn't right, whatever, okay? There's something sacred, and that sacred, that what's sacred is usually a longing. And that longing can be connected to some form of connection. When I was at Pride last Saturday, I was talking with some people, and you know, there were a few people in the name of Jesus, you know, who were dressed in black with their Bibles, you know, screaming at people to repent because they're going to go to hell. And I think I told you the story of joining the saxophone player who was playing tequila, and we were just blowing bubbles and everything. But I met two other guys, you know, and I just said, I asked them, what do you desire here? Why are you here? He goes, well, I don't want these people to go to hell. I'm like, yeah, that would be awful, wouldn't it? Why do you not want that? Because hell's an awful place. It is an awful place. What's awful about it? It's the suffering. It's the loneliness. It's the disconnection. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want that either. And it just kind of, you know, I'm staying in relationship with these guys. But the anger that I think they were feeling toward an expression of love that could be classified as LGBTQIAS+ was angering, and I think underneath that there's some grief, there's a longing for connection, a longing to be loved. And my belief is that the more embodied, the more at peace we are with ourselves and our own being and our own connection with the divine, we can celebrate all expressions of love as they are. Okay. The last one is shifting from indifference to love. The opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is indifference, when you don't care. And I really appreciate the song we opened up with this morning, Julie, about taking off the masks. Because again, at the end of the day, whether it's a sickness, whether it's a financial need, whether it's a job, career issue, or whatever, we put up masks to defend ourselves. And the experience of prayer, the experience of connecting ourselves back to the divine, can be a blessed time of coming back to who we truly are. I want to just close by sharing a few sentences from a poem that a dear brother gave to me. I won't mention his name because I don't want Todd to be called out by this. But Todd, thank you for this. I think this is a fitting close to this experience of prayer. It's called "Please Hear," and think about this. Think about this not just in your relationship to others, but maybe in your relationship wherever you are with God, Spirit, Source, and the divine. And well, I'll let the word speak for itself. Please hear what I'm not saying. Don't be fooled by me. Don't be fooled by the face I wear. For I wear a mask. I wear 1,000 masks. And none of them are me. Pretending is an art that is second nature with me. But don't be fooled. Please don't be fooled. I give the impression that I'm secure, that confidence is my name and coolness is my game, that the water's calm and I'm in command, and that I need no one. But don't believe me. Please don't. My surface may seem smooth, but my surface is my mask, my ever-varying and ever-concealing mask. Beneath lies no smugness, no complacence. Beneath dwells the real me, in confusion, in fear, and aloneness. But I don't tell you this. I don't dare. I'm afraid to. I'm afraid that deep down I'm nothing, that I'm just no good, and that you'll see this and reject me. Each time you're kind and gentle and encouraging, each time you try to understand because you really care, my heart begins to grow wings, very small wings, very feeble wings, but wings with your sensitivity and sympathy and your power of understanding. You can breathe life into me. I want you to know that. I want you to know how important you are to me, that you can be a creator of the person that is me if you choose to. Who am I? You may wonder. I am someone you know very well, for I am every man you meet and every woman you meet. Amen. And so it is.